Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
So today, well, today's an interesting episode. But only to us. Well, really only to me.
Hey,
you're just along for the ride on this particular one.
Are we there yet?
This is a very manufactured milestone.
Dun dun!
But to me, it's a milestone nonetheless. So what I'm going on about this, normally we don't announce in the episode what episode we're on unless it's, a 0 or a 5.
It's one of those round ones that I'm never here for.
Yeah.
So.
But this is our 57th episode.
57. It's not prime. What is special about 57?
So what's special about 57? Well, little backstory. I've oddly become the go-to guy for a lot of people who are interested in getting into podcasting. Somebody has, I want to do podcasts. Who knows about podcasts?
Jeff.
Jeff's been doing podcasts forever. He's involved with 4 or 5. So I invariably have those conversations. And one of the interesting facts that got brought up again during a conversation I had this week is that there have been studies. People have actually checked and looked at statistics. And on average, a podcast, overall, most podcasts only last 7 episodes.
Seven.
That is, it is a rare podcast in the overall scheme of how many get launched that'll go past the 7th episode.
Seven. Just like in between 6 and 8.
Yeah, the one of those numbers that they make a big deal about at crafts tables. Yes.
So, and we're at 57.
We're at 57. We are 50 past where most podcasts usually die.
Well, damn.
So,
nicely done.
Yeah. So that, I mean, like I said, a little bit of a manufactured milestone, but
hey.
There's something to be said for, we like doing this and we don't find the work that goes into it daunting.
No.
We don't always find time to do it.
As evidenced by, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a month since our last podcast. Just, again, you've been job hunting, by the way. Congratulations.
Yay!
Daniel is now employed again.
I am in the ranks of the employed.
And the problem was when we were going to record last time, you had just had a job interview and I'd had a hard day at work, and we realized if both of us are tired, it'll be a rough episode.
Exactly. You don't want to sit, y'all sit around and listen to us go, kind of go, enough as is. This way you get a more upbeat, caffeinated, manic.
And to be fair, it'll be a month before we podcast again, but this time at least we know ahead of time that's going
to
happen.
True, because you are off to the wild and woolly adventures of somewhere else.
Yeah, I am traveling for work overseas. It's going to be, I would be leaving early in the same week we would do our next recording normally, and I will not be back until near the end of October. So I'll just be unavailable, and unfortunately I'm the keeper of the hardware and the website that stores the actual recordings.
Something happens to you, we're in trouble, because I don't know. I'd be like, hanging on buttons. I don't know what's going on.
I mean, one of these days we might have to actually set it up so you could do things, but that'd be effort.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah. Well, so anyway,
before I forget, have fun. Get all your shots, but don't get shot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I'm visiting the travel clinic next week.
I'm good.
So with that out of the way, let's actually get into geek culture now.
Oh, all right.
Let's talk about our subject. So first off, other than the one I know we both saw recently, what movies have you seen recently?
The movie that we've seen
the
recently.
The movie you've seen recently.
The only one that I have seen of any note or worth commenting on is Kingsman, the Golden Circle.
Right. Which I did see as well. So let's get that in a second. Let me throw out a couple I've seen recently just on oddity's sake. So every once in a while when Jennifer Lovely hosts her Friday night horror movie night, we will get an interesting movie that is being pulled up from the past that you wouldn't think about, but it's always interesting to watch. What we watched recently was Watcher in the Woods.
Oh my.
Now, I don't know if you remember this film.
Vaguely, yeah.
So this is back when Disney had not yet created Touchstone. So if they wanted to do something a little darker or a little out of their norm, it was still technically a Disney film.
No princesses in this one, though.
No, and so this was, I wouldn't necessarily say a straight up horror film, but very much, I mean, it was a horror film, but not a, oh my God, jump scare, dreadful one. But it was a horror film put out by Disney starring Bette Davis.
Abby? Yes, sure, obviously.
And, I'm blanking on the woman's name now. She was an ice skater. This was one of the first movies where she wasn't playing an ice skater. She did Ice Castles. She was an ice skater in a James Bond movie.
Oh, yes.
Holly
yes,
something. Yes. And I had it before we were going to record. Now it slipped my brain. But, yeah, and it's set in England. David McCallum plays her father. And it is this family rents a house.
Lynn Holly Johnson,
yeah. This family rents a house from the character played by Bette Davis, who lets them come in because the daughter reminds her very much of her own daughter who vanished under mysterious circumstances.
Of course she did.
And then odd supernatural things start happening around Johnson's character and her little sister. And the special effects are, shall we say, very, very dated.
This came out, for the record, this came out in 1980.
Yeah.
So Star Wars was still, Empire Strikes Back is a contemporary of this. And yeah. If you think of the special effects that was known for.
Yeah.
Oh, David McCallum.
David McCallum. Yeah.
Ilya Kuryakin.
Okay. To you young folk, Ducky from NCIS.
I never put that to you.
And so, yeah, it's it was an interesting watch in that it was a really good story. Mm-hmm. But the thing I was noting, and of course, Bette Davis is Bette Davis.
Of course.
You know, you just sit there and it's like, I'm sure for every other actor on the set, with the possible exception of McKellen, it was like a master class in, this is how you do this acting thing.
Yes.
Because her dedication at every given moment was...
And her eyes. They wrote a song about it.
They did.
Right, so, about the same time this came out.
What's interesting is I just found out that just this year they made a remake.
Of the song?
Of the movie, Watch in the Woods.
Okay.
With Angelica Houston in the Bette Davis role.
Yeah, okay.
So it's... I would be interested to see it just for a comparison. But yeah, it was interesting. The only thing I noted was for some of the other actors, especially some of the younger ones, for some reason they think good acting involves what the volume of your voice is at. But
we wouldn't know anything about that.
Not at all.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that was I think the one. Other than that, for Horror Movie Night was a lot of rewatches. Just because some people had wanted to see films that we'd seen before, but that was one that stood out.
Well, I have to say, the next time y'all do a rewatch of Attack the Block, call me.
All right.
Because that is one that has been that has been on my to be watched list. Something fierce.
Really, really should be, especially with more and more actors from it.
Oh yeah.
Coming forth as, oh, look at this interesting stuff we're doing. So, yeah, let's talk about Kingsman: Golden Circle. Since we both saw it was the big movie release. To be fair. As the week we are recording this is also when the new Blade Runner is coming out.
Yes.
So maybe in a month we'll be talking about that. But for now, let's talk about Kingsman: Golden Circle.
And what a tactastic sort of movie it was. I thought it was wonderful. Let's put it this way. So you have your watching parties that you go off to.
Yes.
I go off on occasion to this organization that's Beer and Stupid Movies Night. This is a wonderful, wonderful nominee for Beer and Stupid Movies Night.
Fair enough. Even the first one, these are not mentally taxing movies.
No. I tell you what, the best way that I can possibly put this is that, okay, so we can all agree that the Kingsman series is basically a loving homage to James Bond movies, only turned to about 12.
Right.
Okay. So, with that as background, I would offer to you that the first Kingsman movie, the one that came out however many years ago,
right,
was James Bond as portrayed by Sean Connery. This one, Golden Circle, I would say is more in the vein of James Bond as enacted by Roger Moore. It's a whole lot more smug. There's a whole lot more gadgets. Everything up to and including an O Eggsy instead of an O James. But that said, it's still, I mean, you check your brain at the door. It is a popcorn movie, but it's mighty enjoyable.
Yeah. So my take, I don't think you're wrong in any of your assessment. When I look at it, my first take is they sat down and went, okay, what worked about the first movie?
Yeah.
And again, the first part is it's fun.
Yep.
Yeah, you put these characters in peril, but overall, it should be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they also remember there were certain cores in the character that were really important. The aspect of you're a gentleman.
Yes.
Is a core. And in this movie, when they introduced the American counterparts, the statesmen, they took the gentleman concept and just went, well, if they're Americans, they're Southern gentlemen.
Of course.
And so the Southern gentleman archetype comes into play very strongly. Best exemplified by the wonderful Jeff Bridges.
Oh, yes. It took me a minute to actually recognize him without his dude-esque beard on. But, you know, yeah.
Yeah. So, the other thing... So, yeah, fun movie. They mm-hmm. understood the pace. They understood what people enjoyed. But the other thing I really liked, and this is... It's something that when it's not addressed properly, bugs the hell out of me in sequels.
Okay.
That this one avoided is very often in a sequel. I think Star Trek, the second Star Trek reboot movie, was guilty of this.
Okay.
Where they go through the first movie, the characters learn, they grow, and in the sequel, they roll back the character development because they can have that same roaring adventure versus, say, the Mummy franchise starring Brendan Fraser. Where
the good Mummy franchise,
right? Yes. Where in the first movie, the two lead characters learn and grow, and in the second movie, they not only did not lose their character development, but they had clearly gained extra levels of character development in between the two films.
Yes,
so the characters are ever moving forward. I also think the Thor series from Marvel does a good job of never forgetting what growth Thor encountered. Kingsman, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Movie picks up. Eggsy is exactly pretty much where he ended the last movie, and even a little further.
Yep.
The thing, and it's not really a spoiler because you see her in the trailers, the princess he saves and then gets to sleep with at the end of the first film reappears as his steady girlfriend.
Yes.
So not only did they have him keep all his character development, but the girl he wooed in the first film was not just a one-night stand, but became a significant and important relationship for him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the thing, it's the characters went through an arc in the first film. You know, let that arc stand and be honored. And
yes,
if you're a good enough writer, you can take them somewhere else without losing any of that. And Kingsman, for all the check your brain at the door aspect that it had, at least had the good sense to not lose any of that development.
True.
Whatever level it may be at. So that's one of my takeaways from it.
I do agree with that. And the thing I will take a step further, well, two things to take a step further. One, there is a certain, it takes a certain style to be able to continue a joke.
Mm-hmm.
From not just throughout a movie, but from one movie to the next movie.
Mm-hmm.
And suffice it to say, if you can think back to the first movie and think of the funniest line out of that entire show,
mm-hmm.
they managed to do a riff on that joke in the second movie that is fresh and unique and had me on the floor of the theater. It was lovely.
Yeah. And the only thing, my only complaint is, and it's one of those things. So if you watch the trailers, you're left with the impression that Channing Tatum is a major part of this movie.
Channing Tatum's package is a major part of this movie.
But... yeah. But he is actually in very little of the film.
Yeah.
He is in fact sidelined very quickly. And yet another performer mm-hmm. and character, who I will not name, although they're part of the joke you're referencing, because they're not in the trailer material, is a significant part of the film, and it comes as a bit of a surprise when they show up the first time.
Yes.
So, but it's much like the last character to appear in Cabin in the Woods. Even naming the actor somewhat spoils the surprise.
True, true.
So I think overall, yeah, Kingsman was great, and Kingsman Golden Circle was an excellent continuation of the franchise. The question is, when they do a third film, does this require them to create yet another organization?
Well, it begs the question, because, I mean, you could take it a couple different directions. Mm-hmm. Because the whole premise of Kingsman is that they were started by the parents of the lost generation, the generation that was killed during World War One. So you have, and the people who suffered the most in that were the English, the French, the Germans. Mm-hmm. And it becomes the question of, maybe it's a rival, you know, is it somebody that they're working with, or is it somebody that they're working against? Either way, I think it could be great fun, and I look forward to seeing what they manage to pull out of their hat.
So again, it's at least nice that it was a pleasant experience at the theater.
Yes.
And that's really, in this day and age, all you can really ask for.
I just have to say that most times when people, in an action movie where there's a big explosion or a big escape or a big ta-da of some sort, most people are like, ooh, ah. In this, every time they pulled off some sort of James Bond, hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat sort of something, I was laughing. Everyone was looking at me funny in the theater because I was laughing my butt off at the great lengths they would go to provide a remarkably entertaining show.
Yeah.
So, there's that.
So, the only thing I will point out otherwise in film right now, when watching the trailers, now some of them were predictable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's going to be the Thor trailer.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Black Panther trailer.
Oh, yes.
Which is very much, I am ready. But there was one I had not even heard of. And I think it's coming out, if not this week, very shortly, called The Foreigner. Have you heard of this?
Yes, with Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan. And it's, from the look of it, it's basically an action film dealing with the premise of Jackie Chan is older now.
Yeah.
But I think somebody went, Jackie Chan's older, but he probably can still pull off a decent action role.
Oh, yeah.
And so it very much looks like kind of almost a riff off of Taken, in that it's, you know, somebody got crossed and people didn't realize, oh, maybe this wasn't the right guy to cross.
Right.
You know, oh, we crossed this guy. Oh, it turns out he's very dangerous.
Yeah. Well, what could Jackie Chan possibly do to us? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it looks like it has the same tone as Taken. It's a very serious film, which is unique for Jackie anyway.
Well, it's unique for Jackie in that it's serious, but it's also unique. You have seen more of his films than I have.
Mm-hmm.
He's shooting guns in this. I don't ever remember him using guns previously.
He has, but the guns are almost always done for a very specific purpose that usually rarely involved at hitting a person.
True.
And it was always very quickly gotten rid of so that he could do the fighting that he's good at. I think part of that is just, A, it fits the tone of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jackie can only do so much jumping around anymore. He's getting up there.
How about that?
So, but still, I mean, it was enough for me to go, well, that looked interesting. I want to see that.
Yes.
Yeah, because when I'm looking at other films, you know, because you look at other trailers, and it's like, not on a bet.
Oh yeah. That is the tradition with my wife and I don't know about with you guys. Watching the trailers, and it's you watch the thing, and in that little lull in between when one ends and the next one begins, you make the assessment of, I'm seeing that opening weekend, I'm seeing it in the theater, I'll see it at the second run theater, I'll wait for the DVD, I'll, you know,
burn in hell first.
Yeah. You could, there's not enough money on the planet to get me to watch that.
Yeah.
Two things. One, thinking about Jackie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
which makes me think of the whole genre that is not necessarily within our normal purview. Mm-hmm. However, I'm co-host. I can do it.
Yeah.
For those of you living in the greater Seattle area, there is a museum in the International District called the Wing Luke Museum. And if you get a chance, they currently have a Bruce Lee exhibit. And it is, I got a chance to go there last week, and it is fascinating because it digs in deep to the history and the mind behind Bruce Lee and his impact that he had on cinema in general. And so it's a really wonderful opportunity if you get a chance. I don't know how much longer it's going to be in town, but it is worth a chance if you get a chance to go.
Well, and Bruce Lee has such strong Seattle connections.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he's buried here.
He is buried here. His son is buried here. We know there is a person that we know and love who studied with one of his first students. And, you know, this is a person that is high on my list of I never want to piss this person off ever.
Yeah.
So,
Wing Luke, how's that spelled?
Wing like bird wing, Luke like I am your father.
Okay.
Which reminds me is the other thing that I wanted to mention. You're talking about trailers and all the trailers that are out and all the things that people are getting excited for. Mm. It is the 5th of October.
When we're recording, yes.
When we're recording. It'll be probably sometime into the early double digits by the time this thing gets out on the airwaves.
I'm shooting for the 9th.
Okay.
Yeah.
My point being, it is 80 days, give or take, less by the time this hits the airwaves.
I saw 72 yesterday.
Okay. The point being, have you seen anything for Episode 8, The Last Jedi, besides the teaser trailer that came out?
No, but I remember that being the case with Force Awakens.
I remember seeing a whole... I mean, maybe it's just me and my limited access, but I remember getting a whole lot more of the full-fledged, like, two-minute worth of trailer by now. And so maybe I'm just,
Here's the other thing. Okay, I will pose a thought.
Okay.
About why that may be.
Hmm?
With Force Awakened, they were working really hard to get us to buy into a new Star Wars franchise.
True.
And they attacked us with Han Solo.
Right in the feels.
Right in the feels. So for Last Jedi, they now have an entire new audience.
True.
Fully vested in this story. Fully vested in seeing Carrie Fisher's last performance as Leia.
Yeah.
Finally seeing Mark Hamill full on as older Luke.
Yep.
If you're doing a cost analysis of how much money do we want to spend on advertising, when you already know that you have the audience in the palm of your hand.
All right. Yeah. Okay. You have a very solid point because, of course, we are all in the shut up and take my money category.
Mm-hmm.
10 months ago.
Most of the hype I'm seeing about the movie right now,
mm-hmm.
unrelated Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
I subscribe to a Twitter called Depressed Darth, which is just a guy playing Darth Vader, and he's the one that posted 72 days. Are you excited yet? and news are people are writing about last. You know, there's not a lot of ad campaign, but the buzz. I mean, people are constantly talking about it.
Yep.
So again, if you're somebody going into Kathleen Kennedy's office saying, "Well, here's our ad budget." And Kathleen's like, do we really need to spend this money? Or can we use it on something else to help promote the upcoming Han Solo film?
Yeah. Speaking of which, I'm vamp for a second.
So, yeah, that's where I'm coming from in the, it's, do I want to see more? Yeah. Am I going to go see the movie? You know we're going to be there opening weekend, possibly together.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to be with my normal film going crew. Hey there, Mal.
Yeah.
And, you know, So yeah, that's going to be that's just where I'm taking it. It's like Marvel. They do push their movies. Usually when Marvel's really pushing a movie hard, it's here's another character.
Yeah.
We want you to know as part of our franchise.
But wait, there's more. Yeah.
But they also, you know, as great as the Marvel movies are, they're not Star Wars.
No. No. I'm going to agree with you and offer to you that perhaps the better answer is they are not Star Wars yet.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you have to admit, while Star Wars has a wide-ranging fan base, most of them are in our general demographic.
Sure, but Star Wars is also, because they've now... Here's the thing I think. I was thinking about this as I was heading over to meet you for dinner this evening. Is Star Wars has hit this magical place now where it is, in fact, a generational story.
Oh, yeah.
And we right now have three distinct generations. We have the prequel generations, those stories, which is still a generation. You have the original core films, and now you have the new films. So the story of Star Wars has now hit where it can progress, because they've gotten us used to the idea that we don't always have to be following directly the story of Luke Skywalker.
True.
There is enough universe to go around.
And it also makes me happy because this also means that with the original trilogy and the trilogy that they are currently working on, which is The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and I will pay buckets of money if they name the last one From His Nap. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but... Yeah. But in addition, there's also Rogue One. There's mm-hmm. going to be Han Solo standalone, which I have to say, I saw a picture of Donald Glover with the mustache, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, the geek in me squeed.
And that tells us that, please, Kathleen, know that we want to see the Lando Calrissian movie.
That would be lovely. I have a feeling who gets top billing in this one is still up for debate. That also means there's going to be a third one.
I've heard right now they are talking Boba Fett, and they are talking Obi-Wan Kenobi with Ewan McGregor reprising the role.
Either way would be lovely. But what this means is that there can be 9 Star Wars movies without the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Those can just be consigned to the remainder bin of history. And it can be... the original trilogy, there can be the Next Generation trilogy, and then there can be the 3 standalone movies. And we don't even have to worry about Jar Jar Binks ever. Beep! Again, pardon the French.
Well, there's our one for this episode.
Well, we can go back and edit it out, right?
So, yeah, and those of you listening, you just got an introduction to how long and how well Daniel and I have been friends, how well we know each other, that we are in that same, why our wives sometimes go... We're almost superfluous to these two.
You're not my type, dude. Sorry.
But anyway, and I'm still of the opinion, especially after the reaction to certain scenes from Rogue One, I would pay good money if they would adapt the first several issues of the Darth Vader comic by Karen Gillan.
True.
Karen Gillian is the redheaded actress from Scotland.
Yes.
Who's going to be in Jumanji.
Who is in Doctor Who.
Kieran Gillian is the bald, grumpy, gothy comic book writer who is a friend of my sister's, who wrote the Darth Vader comics.
As opposed to who's married to your sister.
It's an interesting similarity. One is British, one isn't.
Oh, right.
And one writes Wicked and Divine.
Okay.
Anyway, I think I've talked before about the brilliance of that particular comic.
Oh, yes. Yes,
so,
yes.
Anyway, we've gone on for about a half hour mm-hmm. Based on the timer on the Audacity file.
So, television.
Television. So, here's where we are with television. The new TV season is just beginning to ramp up. A couple of new shows have debuted and that I have sampled. But on an overall basis, it's a little early to see where we are. So let's talk about streaming media first.
Okay.
Obviously, on streaming, what we're really waiting on is the next season of Stranger Things.
You are. I'm still waiting on the second season for Into the Badlands. So
yeah, true. But the thing I just finished, and it was a long haul. I started watching it, then I took a pause, and I went back and finished it, is The Crown.
Ah, yes.
Now, it's significant because The Crown did fairly well at the Emmys this year.
Yes.
For those of you who aren't aware, it's a story of the beginning of Queen Elizabeth II's reign.
Yes.
And features a brilliant performance by John Lithgow, of all people, as Winston Churchill.
You know, if you had told me that a couple years ago, I would have laughed at you, but he's actually...
Well, he won the Emmy for it, so...
Well, he's got some chops, too. I mean, his role of the father in Kinsey was amazing.
Far cry from Third Rock on the Sun.
Oh, yeah.
And Buckaroo Banzai, but...
You know, World According to Garp.
He's been at this acting thing a long time now.
How about that?
So, that's good, but the... The one I just picked up on recently, there's a comedy on Netflix that I want to point out to people called Disjointed.
Okay.
Stars Kathy Bates.
Okay.
And it's a comedy with a laugh track.
Oh. They haven't had one of those in a while.
She plays a woman who runs a head shop in a state where pot is now legal.
Oh, boy. Okay. I was wondering about that.
And the shenanigans of her and her family trying to build their cannabis empire.
So, Weeds as a comedy.
Yeah. Weeds without the Dyer.
Okay.
Yeah. With Kathy Bates, which...
As opposed to Mary, whatever her name was.
Yeah. So, yeah. Just on a... And it really is just charming.
Interesting. I'll just say, okay.
To me, it just has a lot of charming. I'm still on the fence about laugh track on a streaming show, but if they're really, really going for TV sitcom vibe, a subject matter they could never do on network television.
Well, you think about it, because I mean, the last shows that I really remember with a laugh track were either, they were all 70s-tastic. I mean, they were all MASH before it took a dark turn, and Three's Company and all those. And you think about it, I mean, that was the last time pot jokes were funny.
Yeah.
Because that's the same era as Cheech and Chong.
True.
And all that. So yeah, I can see it.
Yeah. Now, as for network television, so a few shows have debuted. So let's take... Okay, so first off, let me talk about the one show... Okay. Just a minor digression. We talked about this one before, but regular episodes are now appearing.
Mm-hmm.
DuckTales.
That is the most serious and somber time I've ever heard any those two words uttered. DuckTales.
So
the further adventures.
It really is using new sensibilities. It's A, they understand what makes these characters work. What makes them quack. But it's also they really put together a strong voice cast, anchored by David Tennant.
Oh, right, because he's doing Scrooge McDuck in the original Scottish.
Yeah, and it really comes through. I mean, he brings the show together, even though a lot of episodes don't necessarily focus on him. But having really experienced voice talent as Huey, Dewey, Louie, and then Webigail? You never watched the original series, did you?
Didn't get out much.
Webigail Vanderquack, who is the granddaughter of Scrooge's housekeeper. Played by Kate Miguchi of Garfunkel and Oates.
Okay, there we go. I'm with you.
And yeah. So I'll just, for those of you who haven't checked it out, it is on Disney XD. I think they're up to 4 episodes right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably can still find them all easily on demand. Do yourself a favor. And go find these episodes. You will thank me.
Okay, then.
Now, with that out of the way, the one returning show that I have caught so far is Lucifer.
Ah, yes.
And,
and 1 million mums weren't able to wipe him out.
Nope. And here's the thing. Larissa and I watched the season premiere. And we went, well, yep, it's back. And we're happy. It's as charming as ever, and that's what this show's bread and butter is it's charming. And everything that worked, they've kept, you know, Lucifer and his antics, Especially his rampant narcissism, because he's the devil.
I was going to say.
But the oddity this season is they have introduced Tom Welling, who played Clark Kent on Smallville.
Oh, wow.
As the new lieutenant at the police station.
All right.
So he is playing as somebody with a big old stick up their butt. Is clearly there to just be a foil for Lucifer.
Well, I can hardly wait to... I'm sure there will be a Truth, Justice, and the American Way...
joke in there somewhere.
Rib in there somewhere.
All right. So, with that...
Oh, rib. Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, the... So, the other two new shows just debuted. Let's take them in order of how much I scratched my head.
All right, the Jeff Harris head scratching.
So for the least head scratching, well, because they're both based on Marvel properties.
All right.
Actually, directly following Lucifer on Fox is Gifted, which is a TV series based on X-Men comics.
Okay.
So it features characters from the X-Men comics. None of the main characters.
I was going to say, this is going to be like a hand wave like they did in Deadpool, isn't it?
A little bit. I mean, they are characters that longtime comic fans like myself will recognize. But we'll just be, and here are a bunch of new random mutants.
Yep.
But one of them is a character called Polaris, who is a mutant with magnetic powers. Who do you think she's the illegitimate daughter of?
Gee, you wonder.
The really funny riff in it is one of the lead actors is Stephen Moyer,
okay,
who played Bill the vampire on True Blood.
Oh, right. I'm King of Louisiana.
Who, his co-star and now real life wife, Anna Paquin.
Of course. Played Rogue.
Uh-huh. So
nice.
Amy Acker from Angel is his wife. Mm-hmm. And thus endeth the actors whose names you will recognize.
Oh, we passed that moment.
For something set in the X-Men universe, it's fairly good. One of the kids who's one of the main characters maybe needs to learn to tone down his facial expressions when he's straining to use his powers. But other than that, it's so far passable.
Okay.
It's like, it is a show with potential.
Well, as I pointed out to somebody recently who was talking about the Orville,
mm-hmm,
if we judged shows by their first or second episodes, mm-hmm, we never would have left Farpoint Station.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm, so what was the other one on the Jeff Harris head-scratching scale?
Inhumans.
Ah, yes.
The other Marvel show.
The spinoff of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. And so here's what's going on with this. This is based directly on the Inhumans characters from the comics, as opposed to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where most of them are original creations.
Okay.
With the exception of Daisy.
Right.
And I'm looking at it, and it's like, there are things they're doing which clearly, yeah, we're on a budget. We can only do so many things. And it is not getting good ratings. It is not getting good buzz. And I'm looking at it, it's like, and I feel when I watch it, like, you're trying too hard.
Well, could it be? I understand that maybe they're trying too hard. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna float a contrary hypothesis here for all a right second. How many superhero shows are there out there right now?
Mm.
I would offer to you that an equally plausible possibility is that we might be getting full.
I mean, CW has 5.
Yeah.
As of this season.
The superhero shows, maybe this will generate some hate mail, which is some sort of mail. Superhero shows are to the 20 teens as reality shows were to a couple of years ago. They're just, it seems like there's a ton of them, and after a while, they all start kind of blurring together.
Yeah. I think one of the issues with Inhumans I have is their villain character. When they pull the same actor who played Ramsay Bolton.
Oh, well, hey, I'd watch that. He's great at playing the jerk. I mean,
yeah, and it's and especially the jerk who's trying to be affable.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any dogs in this one?
Yeah. Actually, one of the main Inhuman characters is Lockjaw, a gigantic bulldog with teleportation powers.
I think I encountered that in a D&D episode once, but okay, go on.
Yeah, so, you know what? It was a two-hour premiere. At the end, I was like, you know what? I'll keep at it just because I want to see where they go with it. Also, on the off chance that something they do impacts Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when that comes back.
Yeah.
So that's the deal, that Inhumans is going to, in the time slot that is being set aside for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., mm-hmm. and once Inhumans 8 episodes are over, then we get the next season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Gotcha.
Did you hear the interesting news about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
No, but I do have something to share when you're done.
So, a report recently came out that ABC was planning on canceling it.
Oh, no!
Yeah, season 4 was going to be the last season. Everything was set to cancel, and then Disney corporate went, no, you're not allowed to cancel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. Well, did they give a reason?
So, nothing that... that's where the speculation comes in. The theory is that Disney is very invested in having an aspect of the Marvel Cinematic Universe on network television.
Okay.
Also, I think there might be some merchandising things going on. But yeah, no one knows why specifically, only that it is very clear that Disney corporate said, no, ABC, we know the ratings aren't that great, but you have to keep producing the show.
Fascinating. Okay.
The other thing about Inhumans, actually, to backtrack for a second. So originally there was going to be an Inhumans movie.
Mm.
And the reason is Ike Perlmutter.
Oh, him again.
Really is invested in promoting the Inhumans. And when Kevin Feige was able to get Disney to say, yeah, no, Ike, you have no more say in the cinematic universe. It's completely Kevin's. And Kevin said, yeah, no Inhumans movie. That the Inhumans TV show is happening because that's where Ike can still say this is what's happening. And Ike Perlmutter, besides being the head of Marvel, is one of Disney's biggest, if not the biggest, shareholder.
He's also one of their biggest, a couple other things that we've already used our one swear word for this episode. So, yeah, go on.
So that may be part of it.
Yeah.
It could be his influence going, no, we want to keep... Anyway, yeah. that's part of the theory. On the other hand, I'm seeing more and more about the new seasons of Luke Cage and Jessica Jones on Netflix. So we have that going for us.
Exactly. One extra little tidbit as far as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the greater Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as we all know, I don't really watch that much mainstream television. However, I'm going back and watching things that I never got a chance to when I was in the Navy or when there were times when I didn't have access to regular television.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently has been watching for the first time The West Wing. Or as my wife and I call it, Fantasies of a Competent President. But moving beyond that, it was so wonderful to see Clark Gregg show up in that. And really, the step between the FBI agent he is playing in that and Phil Coulson is like Phil Coulson is in the it's almost like MCU just invaded the White House. It's wonderful.
There are headcanon that Agent Casper is just an undercover job of Coulson's. There's actually a there was a meme going around for a while that showed one of the scenes with him, because he did a lot of scenes with Martin Sheen.
Yes.
And there was a meme of one thing where Martin's going over a report with Casper, and the meme says, Agent Coulson briefs President Bartlett on the Avengers Initiative.
Indeed.
So that's out there. So yeah, no, obviously West Wing is one of my favorite series of all time. I rewatch it all the time, and West Wing Weekly is one of my favorite podcasts.
Yes, I'm looking forward to starting that when I do my inevitable rewatch, because I gotta have something to get me through the next 3 years.
Yeah. So moving on from television. Now, normally this is where we would segue into comics. I want to take an alternate path today.
The Road Less Traveled.
And talk about a...
About a ding.
A geek subject that we don't touch on very often, which is gaming.
Oh, okay.
So, the reason that there's two things I want to talk about. The first is a new game I came across.
Okay.
So, Steam has become is a great resource now for game companies to publish.
Yes.
In avenues where they wouldn't normally be able to get it, especially games that might be a little too niche.
Well, I mean, you don't have to worry about trying to get out there as much when all you, because 99% of the stuff seems to be downloadable anyway.
Yeah. So the game I recently discovered, and it's a game that's been out for about a year, but it's getting a lot of attention now because some of license deals, is called Dead by Daylight.
Oh, right. Yes, I remember you mentioning that.
So what Dead by Daylight is what's known as an asymmetrical co-op. And that means you have five players, but it's a five against one contest.
Oh, five against one or one?
I'm sorry, four against one. Okay. I misspoke. Four against one contest. So what it is essentially a slasher movie scenario.
Okay.
One player is playing the slasher, the supernatural killer in the mask, hunting the hapless victims. And the other four players play the hapless victims.
Okay, then.
And two completely different win scenarios. For the killer, obviously, it's kill them all.
Go and figure.
There are steps the killer has to go through to kill them all.
Yes.
For the survivors, it's escape the killing ground.
Okay.
And to do so, randomly generated, it's procedurally generated each time on the map, are a series of generators. If they can get five of them working, they have the ability to open a gate.
Which gets them out.
Gets them out. Now, there are little things like, if they're they get skill checks. If they're repairing a generator and they miss their skill check, it sparks and it tells the killer, hey, someone's right here at this moment.
Uh-huh.
And it's a question, do I stay and keep repairing the generator and the killer might be coming for me? Or do I beat feet out of here and then try and either find another generator or circle back after the killer's gone?
All right.
Also, if a generator is repaired, it automatically sends off a flare. But by that point, you're done. Just move on to the next. The thing about this game, one, it has excellent graphics. As a horror movie fan, it has a feel that is evocative very much of 80s slasher horror settings.
Okay.
To a certain extent. Interestingly, there is a competing game very similar on Friday the 13th.
Go figure.
Don't know as much about that one, though. But what it really has developed is because there's no AIs involved.
True.
There is a real sense of tension because you can't predict necessarily what the killer is going to do because it's an actual person running it and they may do something just random because it's their personality or they figured out something about the game. Well, if I do this thing, I might catch them. Mm-hmm. Or they could just, I'm just going to wait here and see if somebody runs past. I actually saw somebody do that once. It's like, that was an interesting way to do it. So yeah, there's a great sense. The game has an excellent ability to build tension and a sense of dread, which in a horror game, that's key.
Now, one question, because from other things you've described about it while we were having dinner, which not the best choice, by the way.
Yeah.
I know that I will never play this because it is way too bloody for my tastes.
Uh-huh.
Do the four have the ability to talk amongst themselves?
No.
Okay.
There is, unless you're playing in a, there is an ability to have your friends. So in other words, an invite only. And if you have a Skype set up,
okay,
then maybe you could. The most you do is certain emotes to do hand gestures.
Okay.
But other than that, there is no ability to communicate, but you do get extra points for cooperative actions.
Okay.
And there's things like if one of the other victims has been attacked by the killer, you then get the survivor say, oh, he just fell. Oh, he's just been put on the meat hook. And you have a chance.
Oh, by the way, did you catch that little tidbit? Yeah.
You do then have the chance to try and save them.
Yeah.
And the question is whether or not the killer is being a jerk and camping.
Go figure.
When I play the killer, I never camp because I find it cheesy. I want to give him a chance to act. I want to play fair. Go figure.
The killer who plays fair. Yeah. How sweet.
So, but yeah, I got it on sale, so I got it for $10. They were having a sale that weekend. So it's normally about a $20 game. It is available on Xbox as well. Most of the killers are homebrew characters, but they did licensing deals to include Leatherface and Michael Myers.
What a combination.
And one of the hapless survivors is, in fact, Laurie Strode.
So the part that I'm dying of, pardon the expression, dying of curiosity on, so if they licensed Michael Myers, does that mean that William Shatner got money out of the deal?
I think they've had the mask altered enough now. Probably not. Although there's a meme going around of a picture of Kirk.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you know, September 27th. September 30th, it's Kirk and his face is getting paler. October 1st, it's Michael Myers.
Of course.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's always going to be one of the great trivia pieces of lore. So, anyway, I'm just saying it's a fascinating game just on the how they manage to build tension. As a horror fan, if you get a chance, I would say, if you're curious, there's plenty of Let's Play videos on YouTube. I do find it you can only play so much, though, because after a while, it is a game that actually can get adrenaline going on either side of play, because
go figure.
Even playing as the killer, you're trying to find these people.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to talk about video games really quick is a trailer just dropped this week for Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yes.
Now, Red Dead Redemption is one of my all-time favorite console games.
Yep.
In fact, it's such a favorite that seeing the trailer for Red Dead Redemption 2 has gotten me, even though I have new games I'm trying to get to, that's all on pause. I'm playing Red Dead Redemption again. Just because the trailer reminded me, oh, I love this game.
Yep.
So, it's obviously set in the same world.
Go figure.
There are crossover characters.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like it might be set. It might be a quasi prequel, because there are characters who definitely die in the first game who are present in this one.
Okay then.
So, and I'm going to assume they will probably won't. If they do die in this one, it'll be off screen. I don't know, but it looks like again the same level of graphics, the same level of care. The reason this has got me excited, and yes, it is. My love of the original Red Dead Redemption is Red Dead Redemption was one of the best marrying of storytelling and gameplay.
Yes.
It really set the stage. Now, other games since then, I feel, have done as good a job. I would say notably Witcher 3. But Red Dead Redemption was the first time I'm playing a video game, and towards the end of the game, I'm like, a freaking video game has made me cry. Because I got so emotionally invested in the characters when something particular happened that is just part of the story. It's unavoidable. And I got emotional. And it's like, I got emotional about a computer game. That is some top tier storytelling. And so my hope and my fear with Red Dead Redemption 2 is, can they possibly match that experience? Was it a one-off? Or are they going to have good enough writing and care of characters to be able to replicate at least... I'm not saying I want them to make me cry again. I'm saying, are they going to get me that emotionally invested in the characters again?
Well, I have to say it's interesting you mentioned the whole idea of video games that have an arc and have a strong story component to them. Again, I'm a little old school. Or a nice way of saying I'm cheap and I don't get out much.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my favorite one of my favorite PC games of all time was one that was called Thief that came out in the early 2000s.
I'm familiar. I never played, but I'm familiar.
Late 90s, early 2000s. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
Wonderful, wonderful game. Incredible, rich storytelling, vibrant worlds where there's no distinct map.
Okay.
Where it's just open and they code it enough that you can wander around for a really long time. until you find the one thing that that works. And so there was three iterations of that on PC, and then they came out with an Xbox version a couple years ago, and I finally found that in the stores. And so one of the things I am looking forward to, well, I was looking forward to in my many moments of leisure while unemployed, however, I guess I get to look forward to it on the weekends, is going to be wandering through that. So it's that same sort of thing. And I sincerely hope that that level of storytelling from the originals bubbles through in the 360 version.
I think it's one of the interesting challenges that's entered the video game genre. And some people point out it's probably one of the things that has contributed to the rising cost of making games is you actually need that kind of writing. So you need to hire actual script writers.
Yeah.
And then you need to hire good actors.
Yes.
To portray them. And the fact that voice actors are now becoming well-known names.
Oh yes.
That and it's not even the we got this well-known actor to play this part, you know, getting a Max von Sydow to do a voice in Skyrim immediately comes to mind. No, it's now, you know, these actors. I think of Ashley Birch is probably the one that comes to mind for me quickly, who got her start voice acting as Tiny Tina in Borderlands, and I just had a game come out where she was the main character, and it's a lot of people go, "Oh, it's Ashley Birch doing this character. Great!" You know, that's where you are now with acting talent in video games, and why the new thing in SAG that led to one of the recent strikes was in having better contracts for video game voice actors.
Hey, may as well. I mean, we're living in the future.
Yeah. So with that, looking at the clock on the recording device, what are you reading?
I finally finished. It was a long, hard haul. Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore. The last couple chapters, it was a struggle to get through. All in all, though, it was still an amazing book. I was able to wade through some of the academia to see what it was that they were the picture that she was trying to paint, and that, so that was fascinating. And next on the list is a post-apocalyptic called Station 11.
Okay.
That's about all I know. Other than that, it is a troupe of traveling actors in a post-apocalyptic setting who go from survivor village to survivor village portraying Shakespeare. So go figure. I'm interested.
Sure. So I'm currently, as I mentioned last time, I'm now reading the second book in Matt Youngmark's Father Mucking Classics series, which is his modern teenager finds herself stuck in literary classics in the role of the main protagonist. This one is, again, A. Grimsbo, Warlord of Mars, which is his riff on A Princess of Mars, the first John Carter book. Now, I'm about not at the halfway point yet in the book, but he has taken A Princess of Mars, the 100-year-old... pulp adventure written by Edgar Rice Burroughs, aimed at teenage boys, and put a 15-year-old girl as the main protagonist.
A modern
15-year-old girl. One of the first lines in the book as, in this event, you know, this stuff happened to me. This is the adventure. Enjoy the boobs.
Yep.
And the amount of shade he is throwing on the gender roles the male power fantasy aspects. And
what was that bit about the gun?
So early in the book, when Alice, the character, encounters the Green Martians, the Thark, and she sees their guns, her reaction is, These guns were so elaborate, I could just spend forever just talking about them in loving detail, which tells me the original author probably did. And because she knows she's in a book,
mm-hmm.
she is constantly ragging on whoever the author is.
Uh-huh.
Especially because initially she doesn't recognize what story she's in. Because she's like, oh crap, at least with Wizard of Oz there was a movie. And then partway through when she finally figures out who she is, oh crap, there was a movie, I just didn't go see it.
Because it wasn't that good.
So, yes. Yeah, there's a little shade thrown on that, too.
Oh, I have no doubt in my mind.
But it's Matt. And again, I'm a little biased. Matt Youngmark is a friend of mine.
Oh, hey.
You know, I know the dude. He's a great guy. And I can just imagine, knowing Matt, the glee he had in going after these aspects of Burroughs. But I recommend it. They are a fun read. He does a lot of things where he's like, here are all these details that probably took, and the character herself will say, I'm sure this took a page and a half. I'm not going to do that to you.
Yeah, I love that. That is one of the things that I'm starting to, it's becoming a whole thing. I mean, going back to Wicked, which has been out for mm-hmm. 20, 25 years now.
Yeah.
Of holding these things that have passed into public domain and just railing on. Well, what's the other one? League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a good throwing of shade.
Oh, yes.
So with that, again, dear listeners, it'll be about a month before Daniel and I return because I'm leaving on an airplane. And I
don't know when I'll be back again.
Actually, I have an itinerary. I'm pretty sure I know. If I'm not back by the 27th, send help.
Okay.
So, with that, though, again, as always, Daniel and I thank you for your listening, for your patronage. Those of you who may have come to us new, yeah, it's usually like this.
Sometimes it's funny.
Yes, though, and occasionally it has my sister.
Hey.
Which usually is a bump in listenership. I always greet new listeners when Jill is a guest host.
Go back and they'll say, Daniel Christensen was in this.
We can only hope. So if you'd like to leave Daniel and I a message, we can be reached at fanboynewsnetwork.com. Just go ahead and leave us a message in the comment section. And with that, come November, we will see you again and we'll let you know what Halloween was like for us.
Happy Halloween, y'all.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2017 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from The Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.